DW Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link program coming to live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
Great to have you here, Isaac. I'm Assumpta Latus, and a warm welcome to all those following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and through our partner stations. Coming up on the program, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has warned that anyone intending to rig the upcoming vote would be dealt with in accordance to the law. But an analyst thinks this is not the way to talk.
I don't think the comments of the president is actually democratic, to be honest.
Kenyans have taken to social media platforms to express their disappointment over Somalia's intentions to auction off oil and gas exploration blocks at the center of a maritime territorial dispute in the Indian Ocean. Our analyst, Andrew Asike, tells us this.
Here in Kenya, people are furious. This is what I can just tell you. They feel betrayed. They feel as if Somalia has sort of backstabbed them.
These are just a few of those stories that we have lined up for you. But first, let's listen to other stories making headlines around the world.
DW News.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. In an interview with DW, Cameroonian Catholic Bishop George Nkou today confirmed the release on Sunday of 170 children and a number of teachers who had been briefly kidnapped on Saturday from a school in Kumbo. While the kidnappers have not been officially identified, Bishop Nkou suspected separatists fighting for the independence of the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions.
They've asked us to close on the school. They want to make a point. There should be no school in the entire division, because we are the only school that was operating. So for our punishment, they brought the children to where they brought them as a sign that, you know, we disobeyed them.
Bishop Nkou confirmed that this last school still operating has now been closed. Two Nigerian soldiers were killed and six others injured when Boko Haram jihadists attacked a military post near the Cameroon border just a few days before parliamentary and presidential elections. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari came to power on a pledge to defeat the Islamist militants. Elections were put off just 5 hours before polls were due to open last Saturday, causing widespread anger. They are now scheduled to take place on February 23rd. President Buhari called on Monday for an investigation into the reasons behind the last-minute postponement by Nigeria's Electoral Commission. A Zimbabwean court has convicted prominent opposition politician Tendai Biti for announcing that his party's leader won disputed elections held in July. Biti was fined the equivalent of $200. Main opposition leader Nelson Chamisa and his party, the Movement for Democratic Change, have rejected the election results, claiming the electoral agency rigged the vote to ensure the victory of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The son of Mozambique's former president, Armando Guebuza, Ndambi Guebuza, was arrested on Saturday in a legal crackdown on suspects linked to a $2 billion government debt scandal. Mozambican authorities arrested seven other suspects last week, including businessmen and intelligence officials in connection to a loan taken out by the government in 2016 and hidden from parliament and international donors. A quarter of this sum remains unaccounted for. Malian soldiers have reportedly attacked by mistake a convoy of German troops from the United Nations Mizuma mission. The German soldiers responded when fired upon, leaving one Malian soldier severely wounded. Around 1,000 German soldiers participate in the UN mission to stabilize the West African country. The European Union has warned that it will retaliate against the introduction of punitive import tariffs for European cars in the United States of America. Referring to an expected report by the U.S. Commerce Department on whether auto imports endanger national security, EU Commission spokesman Margaritis Schinas said in Brussels today.
Were this report translated into actions detrimental to European exports, the European Commission would react in a swift and adequate manner.
The EU and the US have been trying to work out a trade deal, but progress has been slow. The US are Germany's most important export market. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
You're still listening to Africa Link program live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Assumpta Latos.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. And on this note, Assumpta, we welcome all those following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, like Bobby LaRoche for Ban Kabyo says he's following us live from Bamenda.
Cool. We start in Nigeria. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari said Monday he had ordered the police and military to be ruthless with vote riggers as preparations were made for rescheduled elections. Presidential and parliamentary elections were put off just over 5 hours before polls were due to open on Saturday, causing widespread anger.
And at an emergency meeting of his ruling All Progressive Congress Party, APC, in Abuja, Buhari said he intended to make sure the rescheduled ballot proceeds without a hitch. Well, before we came on air, I spoke to Olayinka Ajala, a political scientist at the University of York in London. And first, I wanted to know whether the postponement of the vote was justified.
I think it can be justified because of the excuses that were given for the postponement. If the election was not postponed, those things would have actually been raised by any of the sides that lose the election. So I think they are justifiable issues.
And do you think this in any way will affect voter turnout come Saturday?
I don't think so, to be honest. There are lots of reports saying that some people traveled far distances to vote and then they might not be able to. To be honest, I don't think the numbers of people that travel that long distance, the percentage is not enough to actually impact on the outcome of the election.
Nigeria's main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, led by Atiku Abubakar, has said President Muhammadu Buhari's threat to use soldiers to deal with any attempts to tamper with voting material during the delayed vote was a direct call for Django justice. What do you make of that statement?
Well, I think the two parties have actually been at loggerheads with each other since the campaign started last year. And whatever is said by one party would immediately be picked up by the other party, and it's been like that all along, to be honest. I don't think the comments of the president is actually democratic, to be honest. But sometimes the problem with the media in Nigeria is they might actually interpret it in a way that actually suits them. But if he actually said that, I think that that you could say that it's undemocratic, and that could be a problem.
I was speaking to Olayinka Ajala, a political scientist from the University of York in London.
And we don't forget all of you listening to us. And
sure.
I see Ngong Song Jean-Marie saying greetings from greetings, Isaac and Assumpta. Thank you very much. And Mustafa, you listening from Italy. Ciao, Mustafa.
And Ngong Song Jean-Marie, you are following us from Bamenda, like you said. Okay, many thanks. Now, some of your comments. Castro Troy says because Buhari coming out strongly ahead of Saturday polls, he's desperate to remain in power at all costs, but we will gladly send him back to his castle.
Holly Magana, you're saying, I hope this is not a plot to kill opposition party agents, postponing the elections, and frame them up as ballot box snatchers.
Carlo Gambino says, shoot at sight order, more like that's not the kind of language unruly Nigerians understand.
Well, we'll get back to your comments later. And now we go somewhere else around the world. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has condemned calls from Washington for the European Union to abandon the Iran nuclear deal. Speaking at the Munich Security Conference, he accused the U.S. of meddling in the Middle East.
Now, his remarks rounded out a contentious conference where German Chancellor Angela Merkel advanced opposing visions on Iran and the direction their nation's foreign policies are heading to. Also in this report, William from Kenya's Foreign Cabinet Secretary for Foreign Affairs, who was also at the conference. But this report is by Matthias von Wedelstedt.
The Munich Security Conference held in southern Germany over weekend ended without major agreements being made. As transatlantic and international relations seem to have reached a low peak, German Chancellor Angela Merkel called for continuing on the path of international cooperation. She urged China to participate in worldwide disarmament and harshly criticized US President Trump's America First politics.
Das ist multilateral nicht toll ist. Multilateralism might not be perfect. It can be slow and complicated. But putting yourself in the other person's shoes, looking beyond the pale, trying to forge win-win situations, is better than the opinion of a single party.
Alle Dinge alleine lösen zu können.
The German Chancellor received standing ovations, a rare scene at the normally buttoned-down conference. On the sidelines of the conference, Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Foreign Affairs, Monica Juma, told DW that her country had come up with strategies to prevent security attacks from Somali militants Al-Shabaab that have often carried out attacks in Kenya.
We have started in the last 2.5 years to build a comprehensive border security system, which includes, amongst other things, more surveillance. It includes deploying a border command that is in place now. It includes creating joint border commission with Somalia. It includes also building their capacity for revenue collection in the border so that we can check contraband, we can check illicit flow of goods and services and people. And we are also working with the UN to make sure that the management of refugee camps is also in line with the humanitarian character of these camps and that they are not appropriated by terrorist agents to plan or execute attacks against Kenya.
Despite good initiatives to promote trade between Somalia and Kenya, the ongoing maritime dispute between the two countries has threatened to escalate with both countries withdrawing their diplomats.
Matthias von Wedelstedt. And now to Kenya. Kenyans have taken to social media platforms to express their disappointment over Somalia's intentions to auction off oil and gas exploration blocks at the center of a maritime territorial dispute in the Indian Ocean.
Over the weekend, Kenya summoned its ambassador to Somalia back home for consultations because of the dispute in the ocean. Now, a short while ago, I spoke to our correspondent, Andrew Asike, in Nairobi, and has been telling me more about their reactions.
Here in Kenya, people are furious. This is what I can just tell you. They feel betrayed. They feel as if Somalia has sort of backstabbed them because Kenya has always been trying to stabilize Somalia, trying to combat Al-Shabaab. But now that Somalia is getting where it wanted to be, they're actually bringing issues which were not there. So Kenyans are very furious. Today I've been perusing my Twitter. 90% of the comments are negative. Kenyans are even turning on their own Kenyans. Now I'm talking about Kenyan Somalis. They are saying, no, we don't want Somalis in our country. They should be deported back to Somalia. Yet they are Kenyans. They are saying that their family members are in the military. They are in Somalia putting their lives there just to ensure that Somalia is stabilized. So they feel like Somalia has kind of betrayed them.
Exactly. On that point of fighting the Al-Shabaab militants, Kenya has weighed in pulling its troops out of Somalia that form part of AMISOM. Isn't this going to give a leeway to Al-Shabaab militants that are actually fighting both countries?
Well, that is a good question. Pulling out Kenya Defense Forces from Somalia is exposing Kenya's borders, which are very, very porous, to Al-Shabaab attacks. So I've been listening to some analysts who are saying that Kenya's reaction was quite warranted because if you remember the first statement which was released on Saturday by the Foreign Affairs Ministry, they were saying that, actually I can quote, this was an attack on the Kenyan people.
Now, we know that opposition groups in Kenya are fond of taking advantage of such situations to remind the public of their relevance on the political scene. Now, how have they been reacting to this development?
Very, very interesting. By the way, glad that you mentioned that here in Kenya, there's no politician that is not talking about this because they all want to seem relevant. Kenya has been very silent. People have been working hard after the trying moments during the post-election violence. So there is a politician, Musalia Mudavadi, who has commented about this, saying that Somalia knew that this case was at the ICJ. He is blaming Somalia for acting rashly and is saying that Kenya did good to act the way it acted. And he's saying that though they did this, an amicable solution should be reached so as to resolve dispute.
How are Kenyan Somalis feeling at the moment, or how concerned are they that in case the situation escalates, they might become the targets of all sorts of attacks within Kenya?
That is quite interesting. I've noticed that Kenyan Somalis are quite kind of split because some are saying that first, I am Kenyan, Then I'm Somali second, born in Kenya, but I have my roots from Somalia, and I don't think that Somalia acted really well. Some are showing fear. They feel like they will be targeted now that Somalia has acted in this way.
Andrew Asika in Nairobi.
Welcome back to Africa Link, broadcasting live from Bonn, Germany, with me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We appreciate those following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and of course, from our partner stations across Africa, like Mark Eden Wangangs, who says, hello, DW Africa, hello, back to you. Our usual contributor, Monjus Ernest, also says hello, and so is Vilba Lewis.
Still to come, South Africa hits back to track and field's governing body, the International Association of Athletics Federation, saying that the new proposed rules are targeting Castel Semenya and violates human rights.
What's at stake here is far more than the right to participate in a sport. Women's bodies, their well-being, their ability to earn a livelihood are being questioned.
And about this particular story, it will be coming ahead, and we hope the best for Castel Semenya. And I would like also to remind our listeners that we have a new YouTube channel.
Yep.
For Africa Assumpta.
Yep.
And all you need to know, or if you want to go to this YouTube channel, just open your browser, type in YouTube, and then search for DW Africa. Automatically, you'll find us there. And please remember to subscribe and share this YouTube channel, Assumpta.
Great.
Health check.
In health check this week, we are in Senegal. The tsetse fly kills more than 3 million livestock in sub-Saharan Africa every year. Did you know that, Isaac?
Yeah, of course. The tsetse really, you know, gives them nagana. And to the humans, it is the sleeping sickness.
Right. And the blood-sucking insects transmit parasites that cause sleeping sickness for humans, which can be fatal in humans and if left untreated.
But scientists in Senegal are trying to wipe out the harmful flies by releasing sterile males into the environment. Interesting. And as Emmanuel Lande reports, they're having considerable success. Take a listen.
Twice a week, sterile male tsetse flies are released into the wild. Their purpose is to stop the reproduction of tsetse flies endemic to the area and eradicate them. They're reared in a laboratory in Dakar.
Here we are now in the insectarium at the National Laboratory of Veterinary Research.
Dr. Mamar Talasek has been working on controlling the population of tsetse flies at the Senegalese Agricultural Research Institute since 2006. The tsetse fly is a threat to health and agriculture across sub-Saharan Africa. They transmit trypanosomiasis, a parasitic disease that causes sleeping sickness in humans. It also makes cattle very ill, causing infertility, weight loss, and sometimes death. A nightmare for farmers who depend on their animals to survive.
This is where we receive the nymphs that have come from different insectariums. This is where we first treat them when they arrive.
Every week, Dr. Sek receives fly larvae in the nymph stage, the stage just before the tsetse fly emerges. When they get here, the nymphs have already been sterilized using nuclear radiation, a process known as sterile insect technique. The project's been jointly carried out by the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization and the International Atomic Energy Agency. They've already wiped out tsetse flies on an island in Zanzibar. These fly nymphs undergo irradiation in either Burkina Faso or Austria at the Atomic Energy Agency's Insect Pest Control Laboratory. Then they're packed into cool boxes and sent to Dakar by air freight. But only around 50% of the nymphs will turn into operational flies.
By operational, we mean they have good quality wings so they can go and do their job, which is to mate with female flies in the wild. Then their offspring will not be viable, or there simply won't be any offspring.
Flies that pass the quality test are placed in small cardboard boxes and then released, either at ground level or in the air.
We use these biodegradable boxes. Today we have 98 boxes, and each box contains 80 flies.
No wild flies have been captured since 2012, but monitoring continues. Senegalese President Macky Sall officially announced in December that wild and potentially dangerous tsetse flies have been totally wiped out over 1,000 square kilometres in the Niay Zone, a coastal farming region of Senegal. It's a huge victory for the country, as tsetse flies had been a major problem for livestock production.
We're finding symptoms of trypanosomiasis in some cattle, weight loss, anemia, a rough and unhealthy coat, and discharge in the eyes. We treated them with trypanocidal drugs, and we managed to help some recover. I have to say that we have very few cases now. Actually, I haven't seen any in a long time.
Dr. Charles Dieng is a livestock vet with 20 years' experience in the Niay region. Because farmers in Senegal usually put their cattle out to graze a certain distance away from their homes, humans haven't suffered as much as the livestock.
Emmanuel Lande reporting from Dakar on the progress made by scientists to fight the tsetse.
Africa Link. Sport.
And as you heard, Africa Link Sports, yes, every Monday we treat you to, as usual, a dose of sports where we get the sports roundup from the continent. And as usual, Samson Omale joins us now.
Current world record holder for the fastest 10 kilometers event, Jacob Kiplimo, has won the Ugandan national 10 kilometers cross-country race. The teenager showed that age is just a number when he peeled away from the title holder and familiar foes, Commonwealth double gold medalist Joseph Cheptegei and Stephen Kiprotich, to win in 28 minutes, 53 seconds.
I cannot fear anyone. You know, it's prepare how you prepare yourself for training. I cannot fear anyone. As long as you are prepared, yes, yes.
In football news, Mali beat Senegal 3-2 on penalties to claim their maiden total under-20 African Cup of Nations title, following a 1-1 stalemate after extra time in Niamey on Sunday. The Anglons held their nerves in the pulsating shootout to hand Senegal their third successive defeat in the final after losing 1-0 at home to Nigeria in 2015 and 2-0 to Zambia 2 years ago in Lusaka. Mali's win came as a shock to many football fans.
I was surprised. I was totally amazed that Mali was able to defeat them, because I never believed Senegal would lose the match.
I'm sure it will not be the best of evenings for the Senegalese after losing their third straight finals on a stretch.
The National Basketball Association and the International Basketball Federation, FIBA, had to launch a professional league in Africa in January 2020. The Basketball African League, BAL, will feature 12 teams from at least 6 African countries. It will include teams from several African countries, including Angola, Egypt, Kenya, Morocco, Nigeria, Rwanda, Senegal, South Africa, and Tunisia. FIBA Africa's executive director, Alphonse Bile, said the league will help players compete in the best possible environment. Adam Silva is the NBA commissioner.
With the academies that we've opened now in Africa, the notion is that we can play a much more direct role in the development of players. And if we get to them, boys and girls, at a younger age, we can begin teaching them not just fundamentals, but the values of this game.
That report was by our correspondent Samson Omale. Now, staying with sport news, let's go to Lausanne right now, where South Africa's runner and world champion Caster Semenya's running future will be decided by 3 judges. Semenya is being heard at the Court of Arbitration for Sport, CAS, in Switzerland, where she filed an appeal against the International Association of Athletics Federations, IAAF, ruling.
Semenya is looking to overturn eligibility rules for hyperandrogenic athletes proposed by track and field's governing body. The IAAF wants to require women with naturally elevated testosterone to lower their levels by medication before being allowed to compete in world-class races from 400 meters to 1 mile. Benita van Eysen has more.
Semenya is not the only athlete potentially affected by the proposed new rule. The silver and bronze medalists in the Rio Olympics 800 meters, Francine Niyonsaba of Burundi and Kenya's Margaret Wambui, have also faced questions about their testosterone levels. But it is only Semenya, who also won Olympic gold in 2012 and has 3 world titles to her name, who has led opposition to the proposed rules. Matoy Reeb, CAS Secretary General said the case was highly unusual.
It's unusual and unprecedented, as I said, because we never had such a case at CAS. What's going to happen, I'm not able to say, but it will be important for sure.
The controversial measures would force so-called hyperandrogenic athletes, or those with differences of sexual development, to take drugs to lower their testosterone levels to below a prescribed amount if they wish to continue competing. The rules were to have been introduced last November, but have been put on hold pending this week's hearings. Arriving at the court today, Sebastian Coe, president of the International Association of Athletics Federations, had this to say.
The core value for the IAAF is the empowerment of girls and women through athletics. The regulations that we are introducing are there to protect the sanctity of fair and open competition, and that's really what we're here to defend.
Reacting to the issue, the South African government has said the rules set out by track and field's governing body, the International Association of Athletics Federations, is specifically targeting Semenya. The country has called the rules a gross violation of her human rights. Thokozile Shaza is South Africa's Minister of Sport.
What's at stake here is far more than the right to participate in a sport. Women's bodies, their well-being, their ability to earn a livelihood, their very identity, their privacy, their sense of safety and belonging in the world are being questioned.
A former Czech and later American professional tennis legend, Martina Navratilova, has also thrown her weight behind Semenya. The 18-time Grand Slam singles winner said it was significant that rules also apply to female athletes competing in distances from 400 meters to a mile. Leaving out sprints and long distances will be a clear case of discrimination by targeting Semenya, says Navratilova.
But Benita van Essen with that report. Thanks. Exactly. Assumpta was about to massacre her name. And as you heard her tell us, Semenya has got support from, you know, former tennis star Martina Navratilova, who found herself one day in such a predicament.
Yeah, well, this is quite a strong statement there. And I think this is really nice. It's good for Semenya, and it's good for all other athletes.
Yeah, there's another athlete who's in question, you know, just like, you know, Semenya. Her name is Margaret Wambui. She's Kenyan, you know. She also has to do these tests.
Yeah.
But what, you know, is amazing to me, Assumpta, is that, you know, they're getting enormous support from the public. It is the way to go.
Yeah. Now, we do have some comments from our stories that we have been covering here. And one of the stories that we covered, it was the Kenyan story.
A maritime dispute between Kenya and Somalia has threatened to raise tensions between the two countries that previously have been working together to fight Al-Shabaab militants. Off to your comments now. Young Roland Ngong says they should go to the International Court of Justice. Well, Ngong, they're already there. The case has been there since 2014. And he goes on to say that was how Nigeria and Cameroon ended a long-standing dispute over Bakassi Peninsula.
Well, and Sean K. Don, are you saying that if Somalia had stability, they would have been our biggest neighboring trading partners in the East Africa, apart from Uganda, Rwanda, Congo, and you would love for once to do away with Tanzania, and I'm just wondering why. I can get personal.
You can feel it. Yeah, this is, you talk about Tanzania, your country. Maybe he meant the monopoly, you know, exercised by Tanzania in trading with these countries. They would once, you know, want to deal with a different trade.
I mean,
partner.
I wouldn't expect this sentence from a Kenyan.
So.
And you're saying that you love your country, Kenya. So, I mean, I wouldn't expect this from a Kenyan.
And I'm sure you love your country, Tanzania, Assumpta. Anyway, well, Francis Bayer suggests make Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo the chairperson. He's very good at mediation and bringing peace.
Okay. And Tom Singando, you're saying Africa, you are still living in the same old world of village conflicts. Grow up, because any step backwards means many steps to the future. That's what is called retardation of development. Wow.
And the Chipire Karonde wants to be a little bit ironical. He says, let Ethiopia mediate. Assumpta, if you can read between lines, you know what Karonde meant. Yeah. Anyway, many thanks for giving us company. And in case you want to comment on the stories, go to our Facebook page, DW Africa. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Assumpta Latus. Thank you for listening.